This is the Improve Photography Podcast, episode number 95. This episode is brought to you by Fracture. Fracture is a way to print your photos directly on glass, and it starts at just $15. The photos are beautiful, and I know you'll love it. You can take advantage of it by going to fractureme.com, and you can get 15% off by using coupon code PHOTOSONGLASS15. And we thank them for their support of the podcast. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Improve Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Harmer, and I'm joined by my friend, Darren Meller, to talk about today's topics.
Hey, Jim, how are you? Are you fresh back from Iceland? How are you feeling? And all that other good stuff.
I'm back. I had a week to recover now, and it was an incredible, incredible trip. This is one of the free trips that we did with the Improve Photography Travel Group. It's our free photo workshop series. So if anybody's interested in joining us on a shoot, go to improvephotography.com/travel group. And when we say it's a free workshop, we mean it is a free workshop. We're spending our own money to get out there and teach photography to all of you and spend some time with you. It's a way that we just kind of give back to the photo community and all of you, since we know you do so much to support Improve Photography.
Yeah, and it's just a great location, and I'm going to be joining up with Jim on some locations. Hopefully my dad will be tagging along, and I just think it's an amazing product that Jim's putting together that helps us network with other photographers, teach them new techniques, and at the end of the day, I guarantee that Jim and I are learning some things from you when you tag along for this. So what did you do to get prepared for this trip? I mean, what was entailed, Jim, like, as far as cost, preparation, things that were going through your head as you were solidifying this trip from an idea into a reality?
It didn't take very long to come into reality. The way that we're doing a lot of these travel group trips is we're using Living Social, especially Groupon as well. But Living Social, they post some incredible, I mean, unbelievable travel deals. Like the Iceland trip we got from the United States, we got our airfare and our lodging and some of our meals, because you know, the hotel had actually a pretty nice breakfast every morning for $699 from the US to Iceland. It was crazy. I mean, that's such a good deal to shoot in 5 days in Iceland for $699 was insane. And so we're kind of hunting through those, trying to find it. And when I saw Iceland pop up, I was like, done. Because I mean, Iceland is a photographer's paradise. I mean, it's Disney World for photographers. There are just so many beautiful locations. I saw it, and so I posted on the travel group page, and I said, hey, who's coming to Iceland with me? And we all jumped on it pretty quick, and we had a great group, about 20 people out there in Iceland. You know, we didn't charge anything. It's not a for-profit thing for Improved Photography. We just go out, shoot, we would post-process together, spend time at the hotel looking at each other's photos and helping each other out when we're on location. Some people are brand new, and some people were more experienced, and that was kind of fun, especially for, you know, the new people, that they had so many people to ask and get help from, and for the more experienced people to have the opportunity to teach others and show others what they were doing.
That sounds like a really great adventure. So, I mean, it looks like you have it pretty nailed down as far as going through Living Social and finding good deals as far as travel. But what's going through your head as far as preparing for a trip like this? I mean, are you doing anything, because this was an international trip? I mean, I know you've been traveling a lot lately by going out to Portland, Babcock State Park domestically. But what are you doing when you're going across the ocean to another country? Is there anything special that you had in mind, or maybe a quick overview of the packing list that you had of what you brought with you? Just because I know there are all these questions were going through my head right before I was ready to depart to go over to Europe for the first time with a full set of professional photography gear.
Well, I took your advice after you went to Europe and you just hated that you had so much stuff that you had to lug around. I packed as light as possible, and I went with my carry-on and a personal item for 5 days. And so to do it, it was tough to fit everything in, but I have a pretty lightweight tripod, which is good because a lot of people have to check their tripod if it's too tall, too heavy, things like that. So I have a lightweight tripod, and you can find that at improvephotography.com/tripod. I have my recommendations there. And then for my gear, I put I separated my stuff in two bags because I thought there's no way I'm going to show up in Iceland. You know, they're going to say, oh, I'm sorry, sir. We have to gate check your bag. And then it never shows up and I have no camera in Iceland. So I said, there's no way that's happening. So I put one camera body in my personal item and another in my, my bigger carry-on because, you know, they always want to gate check those things. When they see a rolly bag, they're like, green tag that sucker. So I made sure to separate my essential camera gear and keep everything in my personal item that I, you know, I could survive on for the trip. So passport, camera, tripod, laptop all came in my little tiny photo bag, my Click Elite Sport, so that I knew if, you know, no matter what happened, I do have my most important stuff with me.
That sounds like you were really prepared. And I mean, beyond the obvious of the cold weather items, it just seems like this was a jam-packed trip that was full of fun. And as you said, you had a lot of shooting time. It looks like you were shooting from November 9th, clear through the end of the 12th. I mean, who all joined you? I mean, was it just listeners of the podcast, people who randomly stumbled upon the page? Is there anyone that just stood out in the group?
You know, we had such a big variety of people. I think that's what made it so fun. I think we ended up with people from six different countries, and it was so fun. It was just such a melting pot of people that everybody was just so friendly, and it made it a fun trip. You know, it was just awesome. I loved everybody there. Everybody was just so friendly, and I think everybody that commented on the trip made note of that, you know, they came for the photography and they ended up actually making some friends. So what I did as I talked with the people on the trip is at the very end, I interviewed a few of them. I wasn't able to get all, and the audio quality didn't work on some because it was kind of noisy in the background. So I wasn't able to include Rob's. I'm sorry, Rob. But we did talk to a few, and so we're going to intersperse those throughout this interview. So let's go to the first from Brian McGuckin, who came from Indianapolis. All right, up next we have Brian McGuckin, who joined us from, let's see, where are you from?
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis. And so you're one of the more experienced photographers on the trip. You've done a lot of shooting, and you're doing some shooting professionally with Expedia and shooting sports. How does your prior experience of what you've done before compare with what we've done this week?
What we did this week, I think what I really enjoyed about it was having the opportunity to work with people of so much diverse experience. And you know, just having the opportunity to talk with others to, as I'm helping them, figure things out for myself a little bit, and also just asking other people how'd you get that shot, and seeing us all kind of maybe taking a similar shot but in a totally different way. You know, being able to just talk with you and say, hey Jim, how'd you set this up? You know, what are you doing? It just helps to kind of see it like with a different set of eyes.
So we shot a lot of different locations. What was, is there one location that you wish you had a mulligan on or you could redo that just the photo didn't quite turn out how you wanted it to?
Yeah, definitely the Northern Lights shot there above the waterfalls. Just I just was having some trouble with the focusing on it. Hopefully I can figure out how to recover it a little bit. It just standing there was amazing, but that would be my mulligan to have another chance at that.
Yeah, that was really strange. We were talking about that, and you realized it while we were there, that we all kind of set our lenses to infinity, and all the photos were looking sharp down the line. I saw your lens. I knew we were all at infinity, but for whatever reason, they just weren't quite showing up sharp at night, and it was a little bit of a mystery to me exactly what was happening, but it was an awesome shoot either way. How about something new that you've learned in Lightroom or Photoshop? Any tool that others have been using or an approach to photo that you hadn't really considered?
When I use Lightroom or Photoshop, it's just very basic. So it was helpful just to sit around with other people and see what they were doing and the adjustments that they would make. You know, typically I use the slider and clarity and shadows, and that's about it. So just seeing some of the masking that people were doing, that was helpful. Seeing the composites that people were making, taking the Northern Lights and putting it, you know, on that beach with the black rocks. Just watching other people do their work is kind of how I learned best. So that was extremely helpful.
Cool. And how about packing and gear? Anything, any piece of gear you left home that you wish you would have brought, or is there something that you brought that you're really glad you had that you were on the fence about before?
No, I've done enough travel photography to know what I want. I realized this time I still brought too much clothes, mm-hmm. So maybe I need to bring less. I think I do need to get an ND filter, something just to be able to shoot, you know, the waterfalls during the day a little bit better. But I'm really pleased with how things turned out, and the gear that I did bring, I think, worked well for me this time.
Yeah, I brought a couple ND filters, and most of the people use theirs a lot. I actually found that I never had to bring mine out of the bag because I brought the D810, and the base ISO is 64 instead of 100. So if I went to 64 or dropped it down to low one, then I was able to cut out, you know, quite a few stops of light at that point, and I found that I didn't really need the ND filter. So that was one cool thing on the D810 that, you know, at first when I heard it, I was like, ah, big deal, you know, okay, it has a lower ISO, we want the higher ones. But it was actually kind of helpful. Well, any last minute tip or advice you'd have for those who'd consider coming on a trip?
If you can afford it, you know, it is totally worth the money. We got a great deal for all that we did.
Yeah, and
all
$700.
It was amazing. You know, I think you got to be ready to go. You know, there's so many great opportunities out there, and you could just stay back and relax a little bit and see it at an easy pace, or just, you know, gung-ho, just go after it and just enjoy it, really. You know, the other piece of advice is keep an eye on Jim, making sure that he doesn't drop his camera or anything into the water or around the rocks again. But other than that, yeah, it was a blast. It was great to meet new people and make new friends from around the world and have the opportunity to just pick your brain a little bit, and just spending time communing together with people is always fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I know a lot of people mentioned that they like that you could kind of take whatever pace you wanted. You know, both of our cars were always, we went from crack of dawn until way after, later than we should have been, shooting every day. And some of the other cars were said, you know, we're kind of tired, we're going to shoot some area around the hotel, and it was fine. It was kind of nice that everybody could do the intensity level of photography that they wanted. Well, thanks for joining us on the trip, and hopefully we'll be able to see you again.
Great. Thanks, sir.
All right, so that's Brian. I really liked shooting with Brian. He was just a nice guy, and he's a very experienced photographer. He shoots some NFL games and stuff, but it was fun to be able to shoot, to see other people's different approach to the shoot. Really made it a great experience.
It seems like it was a great experience. I mean, and that kind of goes to show what we were talking about on a recent episode of the podcast of how sometimes certain lenses, even though we put them on Infinity, it might not come out as the result. So his mulligan was the Aurora Borealis from Northern Lights shot. So mainly was that the issue he ran into, is not being able to get true Infinity focus, or?
Yeah, and that's exactly why I had asked Mark Gee about that last week. Or a few days ago, I guess it was, because that was the exact problem that Brian was having on that shoot, and he was using a Canon zoom lens, and the photo just wasn't turning out sharp, and I was kind of perplexed, you know, because I've never had that problem. I always just set my lens to infinity, looking at the, you know, there's a little meter on the top of the lens, and you just turn it to the little infinity symbol, and boom, you know, you're set to go. I've always done that on my Nikon lenses. Never once had a problem with it. But it sounds like that Canon, especially the Canon focus meter, is not very accurate, especially on the zoom lenses, even though it works pretty well on the primes from what Mark was saying.
Yeah, and I've noticed it also in my 24-105, going back and looking at some fireworks photos where a friend of mine at the time just said, throw the focus on infinity and you'll have a great result with a higher aperture. And I noticed looking at them now, they weren't as clear as they could have been because I just slid it all the way over to the right. So that's maybe something we'll have to look at a different time. But back to the trip, it does look like you guys hit the ground running. I mean, you got there at 6:40 a.m., it looks like, or pretty early in the morning, and you still had time to get sunrise in within a couple hours and make it over to the Blue Lagoon, so you didn't waste a sunrise. So I mean, what's that like over there to have the ability to have such a later sunrise and have different hours for shooting? It just seems almost breathtaking and insanely convenient.
Oh, it was so awesome. This was a great time of year to visit Iceland. I mean, there's not a bad time of year to visit Iceland, but I really liked shooting in the fall because the way that the light worked, I mean, the sun wouldn't rise until 9:45. And so we could like sleep in. Usually on landscape photography trips, we're waking up at 2:30, 3 a.m. We hit the ground running, got to be at the location early by sunrise, and it's an hour to get there. You know, we're working like crazy. This was nice. You know, we could sleep in, have the hotel breakfast, and still get out there, which we really liked. But yeah, at the Blue Lagoon, it's a location not very far from the airport, and it's actually from a power plant, but it makes the water this incredibly blue turquoise kind of color, and it's just a beautiful spot. So we went, shot there a little bit, and this is my brand new Nikon D810. My old Nikon D810 tanked, and actually I sent it into repair. No luck. So it is just dead. It had like 100 frames on it. It was still new, and I killed it with water at the Olympic shoot that I talked about. Anyway, it was dead. So this is my brand new D810. Had like 100 pictures on it or less. I brought it out there. No, maybe like 10 pictures I had ever taken with this. Brought it out to the Blue Lagoon, set it out on the tripod. We're right at the edge of the water, and somebody called my name. So I turned around, knocked my tripod, and is like slow motion. And like literally an inch, which is like your thumb size for those of you who aren't in the USS, in the US. It's like right on the water. I just grabbed my tripod and the lens didn't quite hit. And it was scary. But man, I have something with killing cameras lately. I've killed two cameras in the last month and just about killed my new one twice on this trip. So I'm going to have to be a little bit more careful, but it was a fun shoot.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what Brian was referring to, where we just had to watch out for Jim to make sure he wasn't breaking his gear. So I had to have a laugh at that when he mentioned that. So beyond the Blue Lagoon, did you focus on any other areas on the first day of shooting, or did you mainly get in early and start shoot or planning out what you were going to do on the second day?
Well, we shot at the Blue Lagoon, and then we decided we were going to shoot a location called Brewer Foss. And we knew before we tried that it was a very hard location to find, very hard. And we got a bunch of different directions and the GPS locations, and we said, okay, we're going to give it a shot. So we drove out to Brewer Foss, and again, I mentioned the days are very short. Sun sets at like 4:30. Wow. In fact, it's so weird because the sun rises and it goes up like, you know, 10% up the horizon, 10% up the sky, and then just sinks right back down, seemingly right where it rose from. You know how the sun rises in the east and sets in the west? Not in Iceland. It rises and sets like in virtually the exact same location. And it just, you know, at this time of year, you don't get a lot of daylight hours, which is awesome because the sun doesn't go, you know, straight overhead. It means the sun just kind of always hugs that horizon. It doesn't go up very high. And so you get great light. You know, we were shooting landscapes at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was great light because of that. So that was really fun. Anyway, we went to Brewer Foss, and we probably spent 2 hours, all our cars spread out. We had four different cars searching around. We knew we were right in the area, but we could not find this little waterfall. But it was so gorgeous, we had to keep trying. And eventually, two of the cars, we did find it and got to shoot it at sunset. And I mean, I've seen a lot of different waterfalls, shot a lot of waterfalls. This one is insane. It's so beautiful. It's small. It's smaller than you'd think it'd be, but just for photographers, it's like God just sculpted this waterfall just so you can go to Iceland and shoot it. It's just incredible in photos. Beautiful, beautiful spot.
And I think I saw a couple of those shots come back. And I mean, this just seems like the ideal location for a photographer, because as you were mentioning that, there is no period of time where you have those, you know, afternoon shadows and highlights that you have to worry about with that harsh light. This is just great. So, I mean, when you were shooting, did you find that there was just one location that was one of the better ones to photo in Iceland? I mean, I noticed when just looking at you guys posting, you headed out over towards, and I'm probably going to butcher the name of the town, but is it Kirkjufell?
Yeah, Kirkjufell is a waterfall, and we went to that the next day, and it was a little bit more of a drive. I think it was about 2.5-3 hours to get there, and so we left early in the morning. You know, got together at 7, had breakfast together, and then drove out. And we decided, you know what, we're just going to take our time. We're going to spend the whole day just kind of making our way over to Kirkjufell, because we wanted to shoot there at night. It's just it just begs to be shot at night, this location. So we decided we were just going to take our time and just stop anytime anybody sees anything cool. In fact, I think on the next trip, I need to get yellow flags like they use in American football, you know, where it's like penalty and everybody needs their yellow flag that they can throw up in the car and be like, stop, we need to shoot this spot. Anyway, so we stopped at a lot of different spots on the way. We shot some of the Icelandic horses that are just everywhere. And it's like, they do not care about humans. Literally, they'll just lick your lens while you're sitting there. And they're just beautiful, cool-looking horses. So we shot the horses on the landscape quite a few times. And I think everybody got a good photo of those horses. We'd usually kind of get down and just shoot wide of that horse. And then the Icelandic landscape behind it was awesome. We stopped at a little old farmhouse and a waterfall, a couple other places on the way. Then we got to Kirkjufell. And we got there in the afternoon. And just as we got there, the skies parted and there was just, it was totally clear, not a cloud in the sky. This was the only time on the trip that we didn't see a cloud in the sky. And so we were all just chomping at the bit because it was, I mean, perfect. This is an awesome night location. It's rare that you see a cloudless night in anywhere in Iceland, but especially in this spot. And so we were so excited as the sun was setting. We really didn't have much of a sunset. And then clear sky, we knew the stars were going to be awesome. And on the Northern Lights scale, today was a 5. You know, it's out of 7. 7 is like, somebody called a newspaper once in a lifetime. And this was a 5. So it was going to be a pretty good night for the Northern Lights. So we were out there and we just had to wait. We had to wait and wait and wait for a few hours. And so we went to this horrible little diner, horrible, horrible little diner that made it. You go to the diner and you look at the menu and they have 4 options. 1 option, hot dog. Option 2, hamburger. Option 3, grilled cheese. Option 4, more hamburgers. It was awful. And the food tasted so bad. But we just sat there and we busted out laptops, everybody who had them. And we just post-processed and showed the photos that we'd already taken and just nerded out for a while. And it was actually kind of a fun time that we spent this awful little diner. And then we kept going out every 10 minutes. We'd go out and check. And we went out and looked at one point, and we saw just like this weird, it kind of looked like a contrail, just like this gray strip going clear across the sky. And we said, okay, the show is about to begin. And so somebody ran in and said, you know, Northern Lights, and everybody ran and grabbed their cameras, and we ran into the cars and drove just 1/2 mile away to where this spot was. And so we got to Kirkjufell, to this waterfall, and we'd had the advantage of shooting there earlier in the day, which was awesome, even when the lighting wasn't good, because I got my compositions just nailed down. I knew exactly what I wanted to do at the location by the time it was night. So really, it was just like, set your tripod up and click. We had everything else figured out, knew where we wanted to shoot. And so we started shooting. The Northern Lights appeared. And so the Northern Lights, they move, but they move kind of like stars. It's not like, you know, going crazy. And, you know, you may have seen a time-lapse video where they're like dancing around like crazy, moving in the sky. It's slow movement. You know, every 30 seconds, you'll see some movement. But it's slow movement, just a little bit faster than how the stars move. Anyway, so we started shooting. And we got an incredible shot of, you know, the Northern Lights. This is what's insane about Iceland. In one shot, we see the Northern Lights. We see this beautiful 3-headed waterfall, a river, a lake, Kirkjufell Mountain with snow on it, just snow capped on the top, and the rising moon and the stars and a shooting star, all in one frame of the camera. Like, we were all just beside ourselves. It was the most incredible photography moment I have ever seen. It was just incredible. Everybody got a good shot from that location. It was awesome.
And for those of us who have seen the photos, that especially the one that you're referring to there, our reaction is probably similar to that, to where we were just astonished with the results. I expected some great photos, but I mean, these ones even surpassed some of the ones even earlier in the year with some other trips that you've been on. I mean, to have all of those elements in one shot had to be perfect. But I also noticed that the images were very clear, and you said you were shooting waterfalls and we're looking at cold climate, horses licking your lenses because they're so friendly. What did you do to keep your gear protected? protected because, you know, this is a second go at a D810. So what did you do?
Well, I guess I'm a little bit of a glutton for punishment. I really did nothing to protect my gear. As we talk about some of the waterfalls, there's one thing I did to protect the lens from getting wet, but I did really nothing to protect the gear, and I probably should have. One of the guys that stayed a couple extra days did have a camera tank on him, from what I read, but I did nothing and I did fine. But a lot of the people did bring out their waterproof, you know, protector for the camera that you can buy. They're very cheap. You can find it improvephotography.com/raincover. Very inexpensive, and it's good to have. And I had one in my bag. I wanted to keep shooting. I never busted it out.
Well, hopefully one of these days, Jim can become a little bit better acquainted with his weather protective gear for his camera. But before we move on to talk a little bit more about Jim's adventures in Iceland, we'd like to take a moment to thank Animoto. Animoto has made this episode of the Improve Photography Podcast possible today, and it's an amazing service that we have talked about on previous episodes, and we should talk about it because it can really add a lot of value to both you as a photographer and to the clients as far as the services that you offer them. It is a powerful tool that can do anything from bring some awareness to your business through video and help bring people to your website through search engine optimization and help strengthen your company's image. It's just such an amazing tool. All you need is photos and a little bit of video, and you can make a stunning video. And it creates HD videos. There really is no geekery involved. You don't need any fancy equipment. You can take iPhone shots. And once you take a look at these videos by just visiting Animoto, I think you'll be sold on just wanting to give them a chance. They also offer a pro premium plan that offers a reseller's license, so that way you can offer this to your customers, and it's another form of business for you as a photographer. So that's why I think it's so great. It easily enables you and them to post these videos on social media, Twitter, YouTube, anywhere that they would like. And it's so cool because they also license their music legally from an awesome source. So you won't have cheesy MIDI files playing ding, 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 ding in the background. You'll have a jaw-dropping video that everybody in the wedding party wants to watch. And hopefully you don't schedule that video to play during the middle of the toast or the cake cutting ceremony, because everybody will be watching it. It's such an amazing thing that's why Jim and I keep talking about it. Jim's actually worked with it in the past. He's had teachers where he's gone and done talks, and the teachers have brought it up to him saying, hey, you know, I'm putting together this video on Animoto. It's a very powerful tool. And we'd like to thank Animoto for their support of the Improve Photography Podcast. So get your pro subscription started by visiting animoto.com/improve, and you can get a 10% off your pro subscription. Thank you so much, Animoto, for your support of the Improved Photography Podcast. And let's get back to talking to Jim more about his Icelandic adventures.
Okay, well, let's talk about another one of the locations that we went to. After we shot Kirkjufell and shot the Aurora Borealis at night, the next day we woke up and we went and shot a bunch of different waterfalls. And that was really fun. These were the bigger waterfalls, kind of more tourist locations. And so we'd spent a little bit less time at each one of them, which turned out to be good because we had so much to shoot this day that we were just waterfall, jump out, shoot for 15 minutes, and back in the car, go out and shoot the next location. There was so much to shoot. It was awesome.
It looks awesome. What are the two names of the waterfalls that you saw? It looks like there's one that I'm just going to let you pronounce them since you were there and learned the dialect. But
yeah, right. Like I could say, the first one was Skagafoss, and it was just huge. It's just this massive waterfall, and I don't know that I got any great photo of the waterfall itself. It was just so big that it kind of surprised me that when I got home, I looked up photos of the location. I thought, I really should have thought about it that way, but it was just so big while I was there that I just didn't really have any ideas of how to take advantage of it. But one thing I did do is I went with one of the other photographers, and we walked really, really close up to where the water fell, and we took profile pictures of each other, one I shared on Google+, and we'll link to on the show notes. That's just me with that, you know, tiny little me with the tripod, and this just incredible, incredible, huge waterfall above me. It just turned out to be a really cool profile picture, but I didn't get anything amazing in terms of landscapes there, because I was just so taken back from the size of it that I think I couldn't quite compose myself to shoot it.
Yeah, and I can definitely imagine that as well. I mean, sometimes the best photos we take are the ones that we take with our eyes. I mean, there's the ones that we love to share with people, and you came home with some amazing photos. But honestly, if you were just able to remember that and take the beauty in internally, I think that it just would add so much value to you as a photographer as well. Were there any other waterfalls that stood out, or any other techniques that you found when shooting these waterfalls that just made a huge difference?
Well, yeah, the next one that we went to was Seljalands Foss, and this was a beautiful waterfall. It was another big one, but the cool thing about it is that you can, the way that the water falls, it kind of falls out, and then there's kind of a depression in the cliff under where the water's falling. So you can hike back behind the waterfall and see out and see the water and the landscape way outside of it. And so when I shot it, the problem is that, you know, even at 16 millimeters on a full frame camera, which was as wide as I had, you couldn't see all of the cave, you know, this depression, the rock, and then the water out in front of you. And so what I did is I just got as wide as I could, and I shot as much as wide as I could. And then what I did is when I got home in Photoshop, I just completed the cave. I took some of the cave on the right and pasted it on the left, so it makes a complete circle all the way around. And it ended up looking just really cool, cooler than I thought it would. In fact, when I was there on location, I thought, this is beautiful, but I just don't know if I'm quite doing a good job on this one. But it turned out really cool by using that technique. So it looks like a complete cave, and then the water of the waterfall in front of you, and then the landscape out in front. So it turned out pretty neat.
That does sound neat. And then also, so with these wet conditions with waterfalls, you mentioned earlier you did something to protect your lens, since we're trying to protect this gear so it can be used over and over again. So what tip did you come across with this experience?
Yeah, so there's so much spray, you know, just mist coming off these waterfalls, these huge waterfalls, that, you know, sometimes you really only get one or two shots, and then you're totally coated in water on your lens. And so what I would do is I put my hand in front of the lens, just kind of cupping the front of the lens with my glove on, and then I would get everything ready, my camera settings, everything, and then I would just quickly move my hand out in front of the lens so it was revealed, quick snap the photo, and quickly put my hand right back over the lens. And I just did that for, you know, maybe 15 minutes. We're there. Every time I wanted to take a picture, just, you know, bring up my glove and snap the photo. And it was great. I never got a wet lens the whole time. And so that's something that I'm definitely going to use other times. Because even if you use something like a rain cover or something like that, that doesn't stop the mist from forming on your lens. So I'd never really shot that way before, but it worked out really well. And because the waterfall was so huge with so much water, I found that I did not need a long exposure at all, even 1/50th, 1/100th of a second, and it still looked like a nice blurred out waterfall because there was just so much water that was falling so fast.
I'm blown away just thinking about this as you're describing it. But one thing that I'm reading through your travel notes, and I kept up with your postings as you announced to the group, you know, what was coming up next. I've never heard of a C-Stack before. So what exactly is that, and how did that benefit your experience out there?
Yeah, so after we shot these waterfalls, we went to a place called Vik. It's a little town in southern Iceland. And the sea stacks are, I don't know really how they're formed, but they're just like just crazy rock formations that poke out like 200 feet out of the water. And they're just really skinny, crazy kind of craggly looking rocks that just come straight out of the water. And when we got there, the weather was insane. I'm seriously... 45, 50 mile an hour winds. It was windy enough that it almost knocked you over a couple times while we were there. You know, you had to really lean into the wind to even be able to walk. And it was just a black sand beach with just black rocks all around the beach. And then these sea stacks. And because of the high waves and the tide was coming in, the waves were just so powerful. I mean, just the roar of the water and the wind. Waves were just pounding right on shore. And so it was kind of a dangerous situation because we had to walk along this beach, you know, maybe, about a kilometer, I'd guess, out to this location. And then when we got out to the spot, we had to keep looking behind us because since the tide was coming in, we didn't want our path to get cut off by the tide. And then we'd be trapped on this black sand beach as the tide was going to come in and crush us. So we had to, you know, be really careful watching the waves and everything, especially when you're shooting by the ocean. You have to really watch when you're doing photos. I've read a lot of stories of people, you know, getting seriously hurt or losing their gear because the wave comes in with such power and just rips your tripod out and sucks it out into the ocean. So we really had to watch. We were standing up on this rock deposit, so we were up a little bit. And what I did there that turned out really cool that I shared on the Facebook page is I wanted to show the power of the situation. It was just windy and stormy and the waves were just crushing. And so instead of using a slow shutter speed like we would typically do around water, you know, 1-2 second, I was using a shutter speed of, you know, 1/50th of a second. And what it would do is it would show a little bit of blur in the water, but you could still see the streaks of the wave and everything. And it was just a neat effect. And so as soon as the first wave came up high enough and crashed against the rock we were on and sent spray up, I snapped a shot. And then we said, okay, we gotta go. And we all ran back. And, you know, everybody was fine, but we were being just as careful as possible because it was a potentially dangerous situation if you weren't paying attention to what was happening.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I thought it was pretty dangerous when I almost lost a backpack to rising tide at sunset in California, but this seems like a lot more powerful water. And looking at the shot that you submitted with the water splashing in there, there's so much force behind that water, and I'm happy that you guys played it safe. But that was just such a jam-packed day. I mean, I also saw this picture of this wrecked airplane. And what's the story behind that? Because that was just so beautiful. I mean, was that at night or is that day or when was that?
Yeah, so that's near the town of Vic where we were shooting the Sea Stack, and you talked about losing a bag to rising tide. I lost a cell phone to a rising tide once because I set it on the beach, and it was, you know, way far out from the water. The water wasn't even close, but I was fishing for a few hours. By the time I got back, it was dead. All right, so after we shot in Vic, we went over to this wrecked airplane. And so this is a United States Navy airplane that landed in like 1940 or something, crashed, ran out of fuel, and everybody survived on the plane. But it's still sitting out there in just this, it just looks like you're on the moon. It's just black sand for, you know, kilometers, miles, everywhere around you is just black sand. Like, there's no road to get in there. You just drive on the black sand until you see the airplane. It's just everywhere you can see black sand as far as you can see. So it's this crazy location, and then this rotting, decomposing, old Army airplane just landed there. So it's just such a cool spot, such an interesting element to include in a nightscape. So what we did is we did light painting, and I love light painting. I think it's fun. Every time I go light painting, somebody brings the big old light, and it rarely works with light painting because it's dark. And so if you use a spotlight or something really, really, really bright, then what it's going to do is it's going to be so bright that you're going to have the rest of the picture be black if you want to expose it. So usually when I do light painting, and I'm subtle with my light painting, I don't like it to be so in your face, like, look, I'm a light painter. most of my light painting I do with my cell phone flashlight. In fact, we did that at Kirkufell at the waterfall at night with the Northern Lights. Mm-hmm. We got our cell phones out, two or three of us, and we just shined it on the waterfall. And because it was in kind of a shadow the way the mountain was formed, and even that tiny LED light, even though we were, you know, maybe 20 meters away from the waterfall, it seems so tiny. But when it's black outside and there's nothing else illuminating it, it's just enough kiss of light that it makes a big difference in the photos. As soon as we started using the flashlights, everybody saw in their exposures, oh, that's nice. So we did that. And then we did that at the water, at this airplane. So me and one other photographer were using our cell phone LED lights, and we light painted the outside of the airplane. And then the guy with the spotlight, Paul, went inside the airplane and used his spotlight, which turned out awesome because it was kind of a warmer hue inside from his spotlight. And because it was just inside and you didn't see the beam directly of that spotlight, it just looked awesome. It was so fun. we probably spent 45 minutes getting the shot, because when we started light painting it, you know, we'd get it and we'd say, oh, it's too bright in this area, too dark in that area, and tweak it. It was really a group effort, you know, three of us light painting and others giving ideas on what to do with the light and stuff. It was just really fun. One tip or one thing that I learned while light painting it is I was light painting from the side, kind of where we were shooting from, and it just wasn't looking good. The lighting just wasn't very interesting. It looked flat on the airplane, and it was all bent up and craggy metal and holes and stuff all in the metal, and it just wasn't showing that off well. And so later I tried scooting way over to the side and hitting the airplane from a pretty sharp angle. And then because the light's coming at an angle on all those bends and stuff in the metal, you saw all the texture and stuff suddenly come out, and it made a big difference.
That's a good tip. We also learned that with flash photography as well on photoclasses.com, where there's a video where Dustin shows how when we shoot a flash at someone with a side, it brings out textures. But if we shoot it straight on, as Jim was talking about with his airplane, it doesn't bring out those textures. So that's a really helpful tip even to apply to something like an abandoned airplane in the middle of Iceland. So that's awesome that you were able to apply something to bring out those textures. So beyond traveling on this really busy day, what did you do on the last day? I mean, did you find some spots that were nearby that were helpful, or what else did you find that just if you had to say what was the most exciting part of the trip, or how did you round things out?
Well, each time we go do a travel group trip, I always hear from somebody saying, what, it's only 3 or 4 days, that's too short. If I'm going to travel to this location, I want to spend longer. And my response is always, you know what, I promise you're going to be exhausted by the last day, because yeah, it's only 3 or 4 days, but we shoot every second we possibly can and get as much in as we possibly can. And that's kind of the fun of the travel group trip is, you know, if you're just tired one day, you can stay back. You know, if you want to go at a slower pace, that's fine. But there, you know, I always want to shoot every instant that I can. And there's always a group that likes to shoot everything as well. So on this day, we kind of took it easy. We all met up, kind of had a closing little thing at breakfast and looked at all the photos from the trip, spent some time post-processing. Some of the people shot locations close by, but, you know, you get exhausted by the end of the trip. So, you know, when you come on a travel group trip, you know, maybe you want to plan a day before or after in the location if you just want to see some of the touristy kind of places. But in terms of the shooting, I promise we'll wear you out in 3 or 4 days.
I can see that happening. I thought that I wouldn't have enough time when I traveled internationally last, and probably by that last day, I was so exhausted that I begged myself to make sure that I shorten up my trips next time, especially with a lot of shooting, because it does wear you out. And moving at the pace of you, I'm pretty sure that you wore out the photographers, because just looking at some of the photos that came across the Improved Photography Travel Group for Iceland, you guys were out in areas with spray. It almost looked like snow. I mean, there was just areas where it's bitterly cold, and that takes a lot out of the body, especially when you're trying to pull off a really good shot, which I saw so many cool shots out there from both you and from the people who attended. It just seemed like such an adventure, and I can't wait for us to possibly talk about an upcoming adventure here soon.
Yeah, that's right. And the next one is in Oregon, coming right up. So if you're interested in coming to Oregon and shooting the Oregon coast with us, it looks like we have a great group there. A lot of people will be coming on that trip. So come check that out. That's coming right up in, I think that one's in January or February. So come check it out, improvephotography.com/travel group, and you'll see all the information there. Anybody's welcome to come and join us.
Awesome. And we also had some recordings that we're going to leave you with after the theme music that you're more than welcome to take a listen to. Jim had some fun and we played one towards the beginning, but the audio quality just wasn't the greatest. But we do have a bunch of admiration for everybody who took the time to join Jim in Iceland and everyone else who joins us in future groups. So we'll hope that we can put things like this together, but we'll leave you with these recordings of some questions and answers that Jim asked the people who came along with the group.
That's right. If the audio quality, if you just can't stand it, we don't, you know, we're still friends if you skip this part. But there was some really good information, and it was nice to hear from some of the people on the trip, and there are different perspectives of things. So you can feel free to listen to that as well. See you guys.
See ya. Bye-bye.
right, up next we have Brian McGuckin, who joined us from, let's see, where are you from?
Indianapolis.
And so you're one of the more experienced photographers on the trip. You've done a lot of shooting, and you're doing some shooting professionally with Expedia and shooting sports. How does your prior experience of what you've done before compare with what we've done this week?
What we did this week, I think what I really enjoyed about it was having the opportunity to work with people of so much diverse experience. And, you know, just having the opportunity to talk with others to, as I'm helping them, figure things out for myself a little bit. And also just asking other people, how'd you get that shot? And seeing us all kind of maybe taking a similar shot, but in a totally different way. You know, being able to just talk with you and say, hey, Jim, how'd you set this up? You know, what are you doing? It just helps to kind of see it like with a different set of eyes.
So we shot a lot of different locations. What was, is there one location that you wish you had a mulligan on or you could redo that just the photo didn't quite turn out how you wanted it to?
Yeah, definitely the Northern Lights shot there above the waterfalls. Just I just was having some trouble with the focusing on it. Hopefully I can figure out how to recover it a little bit. It just standing there was amazing, but that would be my mulligan to have another chance at that.
Yeah, that was really strange. We were talking about that, and you realized it while we were there, that we all kind of set our lenses to infinity, and all the photos were looking sharp down the line. I saw your lens. I knew we were all at infinity, but for whatever reason, they just weren't quite showing up sharp at night, and it was a little bit of a mystery to me exactly what was happening. But it was an awesome shoot either way. How about something new that you've learned in Lightroom or Photoshop? Any tool that others have been using or an approach to photo that you hadn't really considered?
When I use Lightroom or Photoshop, it's just very basic. So it was helpful just to sit around with other people and see what they were doing and the adjustments that they would make. You know, typically I use the slider and clarity and shadows, and that's about it. So just seeing some of the masking that people were doing, that was helpful. Seeing the composites that people were making, taking the Northern Lights and putting it, you know, on that beach with the black rocks. Just watching other people do their work is kind of how I learned best. So that was extremely helpful.
Cool. And how about packing and gear? Anything, any piece of gear you left home that you wish you would have brought, or is there something that you brought that you're really glad you had that you were on the fence about before?
No, I've done enough travel photography to know what I want. I realized this time I still brought too much clothes, so maybe I need to bring less. I think I do need to get an ND filter, something just to be able to shoot, you know, the waterfalls during the day a little bit better, but I'm really pleased with how things turned out, and the gear that I did bring, I think, worked well for me this time.
Yeah, I brought a couple ND filters, and most of the people use theirs a lot. I actually found that I never had to bring mine out of the bag because I brought the D810, and the base ISO is 64 instead of 100. So if I went to 64 or dropped it down to low 1, then I was able to cut out, you know, quite a few stops of light at that point, and I found that I didn't really need the ND filter. So that was one cool thing on the D810 that, you know, at first when I heard it, I was like, big deal, you know, okay, it has a lower ISO, we want the higher ones. But it was actually kind of helpful. Well, any last minute tip or advice you'd have for those who'd consider coming on a trip?
If you can afford it, you know, it is totally worth the money. We got a great deal for all that we did.
Yeah, and $700.
It was amazing. You know, I think you got to be ready to go. You know, there's so many great opportunities out there, and you could just stay back and relax a little bit and see it at an easy pace, or just, you know, gung-ho, just go after it and just enjoy it, really. You know, the other piece of advice is keep an eye on Jim, making sure that he doesn't drop his camera or anything into the water or
again
around the rocks again. But other than that, yeah, it was a blast. It was great to meet new people and make new friends from around the world and have the opportunity to just pick your brain a little bit, and just spending time communing together with people is always fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I know a lot of people mentioned that they liked that you could kind of take whatever pace you wanted. You know, both of our cars were always, we went from crack of dawn until way after, later than we should have been, shooting every day. And some of the other cars were said, you know, we're kind of tired, we're going to shoot some area around the hotel, and it was fine. It was kind of nice that everybody could could do the intensity level of photography that they wanted. Well, thanks for joining us on the trip, and hopefully we'll be able to see you again.
Great. Thanks, sir.
All right, up next is David Francis. David's joining us from New York, and it was really fun to have on the trip. David, tell me some of the, at least one tip, one practical thing that you learned from the trip that you just didn't realize, a camera setting or something in post-processing, something like that.
Learned that composition is key. So I have been struggling.
What's happening?
And I think I got that idea now.
So,
when we go to different locations and you see, you know, 20 people different spread out across the landscape and taking pictures, what was some of the differences you saw in the approach? You know, that the places that you'd stand and you saw other people doing it differently. Was there something that you said, oh, you know what, I'm going to start walking more closer to the water, or I'm going to start doing this or that, something like that, or try to climb higher or lower or anything like that?
I think I tend to go the opposite of the crowd most of the time. But then when I see some of the crowd pictures, they're actually better than mine. So I think I learned that to follow the crowd is not necessarily a bad thing sometimes. And then to veer off from the ego. But yeah, changing camera position up and down makes a big difference a lot of times. And lower angle is something that I haven't tried a lot, and I think that will in the future.
And where did you come from in photography? I mean, what have you shot before? Do you do mostly portraits or landscapes or night? Or what do you do normally before, and kind of what level of photography?
I don't even know.
I think I'm pretty much a mid-range photographer. I have been dabbling in a lot of landscapes on my love and my passion. That's why I've been concentrating. I've taken workshops, travel workshops. I was in Tanzania in August, and I did a safari, which was a lot of fun. But at home, I do whatever needs to be done, whether it's family photography, family portraits, or headshots, or whatever needs to be done that somebody has. I always like to say yes.
You're the only one in the group who's been here to Iceland before, and you got some really nice shots on that trip. How did the trips compare in terms of the, you know, different approach and coming with a different group before, and in terms of the photos you got, you know, better, worse, different? What was different in the two trips?
Well, I think because I had the experience before, I kind of knew what to expect. But I think I got better photographs this time. And that's one reason that I wanted to come back. I wasn't necessarily happy with all the shots that I took. I was happy with the experience the first time I came here. But I think I was better. I was more prepared mentally and happier with the pictures that I took this time because I had the prior experience.
I can't breathe with that same.
So you have traveled around and you've shot a lot of different things. This is going to be maybe a tough question. Of your portfolio of best images, how many of the locations or photos you got from this trip do you think are going to make it into the portfolio? Or do you think any was?
I think definitely a few from this trip will make it into the portfolio. But I think that on every trip that I take, I expect at least one or two to make it into the portfolio. That's my mindset going on. And so far, that's been the case.
Cool. How about Lightroom and Photoshop? Have you done a lot of post-processing? You know, as we've been sitting around restaurants and at the hotel, have you done a lot of it, or are you kind of waiting until you get home? And if you have done a lot of it, what are some things you've learned or seen as you've been working with other
people? I haven't done any processing this trip so far. I usually take a lot of time to go through the images and to pick out the ones that I want to process. So I won't get back to that. But I've seen a lot of the images that I do want to process, so that I'm confident that I will have a good experience processing them.
Well, good. Well, thanks for joining us on the trip, and hopefully we'll see you again.
Oh, definitely will. Thank you.
All right, I'm joined by Jeanette Bergholm, and she's coming from Sweden, but she's Danish, which she makes sure that we know. And tell us a little bit about what you normally shoot, because you don't normally shoot landscapes, is that right?
Yeah, no, I normally shoot kids, family portraits.
And so how was it shooting landscapes for the first time? Was it as enjoyable, or did you feel like it was something totally different from what you normally do?
it was different. I was really out of my comfort zone, but it was fun, and it was nice to get to have the time to think before you take the picture and to think about the composition and how you want the picture to be, and learn a bit about leading lines and more than just face expressions.
I noticed while we were shooting, you really focused on the compositions, and you had some really good ideas. We were joking last night about how you always have puddles in your photo to have the reflection of whatever's behind it. But there was a time while we were shooting a waterfall that I saw you over shooting a little puddle, so you saw the waterfall in the background and then the reflection of the waterfall in the puddle, and it was really cool. So what kind of things did you look for while you're focusing on your compositions?
I look at leading lines and I like reflections. It's easier for me to find something close to focus, and I like, it gets so big with landscape, I think I like something in the foreground to take focus. The focus point is difficult for me still, so in the foreground I have something safe.
So what was difficult about the focus point? I noticed while we were shooting off and you'd ask, so where do I focus? What do I do? What was the struggle, and what did you learn what to do with the focus?
Yeah, in night photography you see nothing, and it's very difficult to find out when it will be blurry and what f-stop number to use.
What's your favorite?
So it was like to put infinity to get the northern light or the night photography and still get the waterfall kind of in focus, and the rest we have to fix the Lightroom and Photoshop, I think.
Yeah. So when you're shooting night photography, like the example you used, we had a waterfall, let's say meters, maybe 20 meters away it was, or even 15. And so we had that, and then way behind it, we have the northern lights and the stars. So it was tough to know where exactly to focus. But what we saw is on our wide-angle lenses, even though the target was only 15 or 20 yards from us, we were still able to just focus at infinity, and everything was fine. In fact, we got a flashlight and shined it on the waterfall a couple times so everybody could lock their focus, and still I think every lens was at infinity. With a wide-angle lens, you're almost always going to be at infinity unless something's really close, so that was nice. How about Lightroom and Photoshop? I know you're spending a lot of effort to learn that. Are there things that you learned or things you tried for the first time?
Yeah, it's still kind of this magic box. You put things in and get nice, but it's merging pictures, playing around with that to get...
compositing.
Yeah, and just how you get more clarity and how you use the brush to get... You change the color, you get more visibility in the waterfalls, so it looks more... depth in it, and I need that in my pictures, I feel. So it was really fun to play around with and stand next to other people who has the same picture and the same setting, and it looks completely different, to see, okay, what did you do in the composition, what did you do in Lightroom to learn.
All right, of all the locations we shot, a ton of different locations in a few days. What's one photo that you like, as you look through your pictures afterwards, that it was beautiful at the location, but you just don't feel like you quite got it?
The waterfall we walk behind, because there was a waterfall and there was like gray sky out, and then there was so much color in the cave, but it was really difficult to get the cave color and the waterfall and still get something in the sky.
And that was a tough one to shoot, because we would walk behind that waterfall and then there was so much spray from the waterfall, I was keeping my hand in front of my lens. I don't know what you were doing, but I was keeping my hand in front of my lens and then just quick move the hand, take a quick shot, and then cover it up again, or else the lens was getting wet. How are you keeping your lens dry?
I didn't. I had lots of water spots. Sorry. No, I had this camera sleeves on it. And I tried to clean it and take the picture, but... yeah, I have a lot of water spots. I didn't think about the hand thing. You should have told me that.
I kept that trick to myself. Well, thanks for joining us on the trip. It was fun.
Yeah, thanks for taking me.
All right, up next we have Lauren Beef. Lauren's coming from the land down under in Australia, but you travel a lot. You've seen a lot of different areas. So how does Iceland compare to what you've seen in other places?
I'd say Iceland would have to be by far one of the most beautiful places that I've ever seen. Outstanding photography opportunities everywhere you go. Just, so much so that I've actually changed my flights and I will be leaving a few days later than I'd originally planned.
And so tell me about your experience in photography prior to the trip. What had you done before? What had you shot before? And kind of where are you in your progression of learning?
I'd say that I've been shooting now for about 4 years. I started around 4 years ago when I bought my first camera to do travel photography and landscapes. And I liked what I was getting, but this year would be the year that I've really started kicking my heels in, putting some time and effort in. And I'd say that I'm getting there. I'm quite happy with what I'm producing. I'm very happy with what I'm doing, and I really appreciated coming here and just getting those few extra little tips, seeing your creative process when it comes to doing the editing, selecting the shots, all that sort of stuff.
What are some of the things that surprised you as you were working with other photographers? And, you know, we'd all go to the same location, but what were some of the things that surprised you about the approach that other people have to different locations?
I think what surprised me the amount was just some people would see the scene so much differently. Some people would get down low and see something differently. Someone would, you know, shoot from up high and see something entirely different. Some people would like the slow, smooth waterfalls. Other people would really like the sharp, crisp details in tiny little, would like to zoom in on a small little detail somewhere and, you know, get a great shot. Those sorts of things is what surprised me about shooting with so many different people. And what everybody brought, and I loved the way everybody shared knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the best things about this trip, that everybody shared a lot of knowledge. We learned from you, but we also learned from each other, and that was fantastic.
That is awesome, and I learned a lot from other people too. Like I was saying to some of the others earlier that, you know, we'd all go out, and I always get my best photos ever when I'm shooting with the travel group, because you go out and you're just one person's mind and approach to the scene. When you have 20 people from different cultures and backgrounds and skill levels, you go around and you look at different people's LCDs and you see, oh, one person's shooting down low. That actually looks pretty good. I wouldn't have tried that. And then one person included another element that you wouldn't have. And you're looking at everybody's photos, and it's kind of like you have 20 brains working on one photo. I mean, you're all making your own photo, but 20 brains are kind of giving a little bit of knowledge, and you end up with some really, really cool stuff. Well, tell me about some of the things that you struggled with. Was there a particular shoot that you're like, I wish I had a mulligan or that I could take back, or any camera settings that you struggled with, or something you looked at on the computer and you're like, oh, no, I can't believe I did that. Any mistakes?
My biggest regrets was the fact that I didn't have a lot of different ND filters. That was mostly because
of neutral density filters.
The main reason I didn't have lots of neutral density filters was because they didn't arrive in time. Ordered them, so I had one that was a big one. It was an ND400, so it worked well, but I would have liked to have a few, like an ND8 and an ND4, etc., to be able to do things. Not quite to the same extent that I did. I'd be able to slow it down a little bit, but not as much. So that was one thing that I struggled with a bit. And sometimes just getting into the locations that I really wanted, those were some of the hard parts for it. Got a little bit wet. That was a little bit of a fun experience. A little bit, not something I'd recommend in Iceland, but the shot that I got from it, yeah, it was kind of worth it. So, yeah. The other thing I struggled with was the cold.
It's cold.
Being from Australia, I'm not quite sure how to handle this kind of weather, but I don't get to do it very often, so why not? You know, I've now got cold weather gear. I might have to come back sometime.
That or we'll just do all our future trips in Australia. Well, thanks for joining us on the trip. It was really fun to have you.
Thank you. Good to be with you as well.
All right, up next is Mark Franks coming from Pleasanton, California. And Mark, this is your first time in Iceland, but you've gone around and shot a lot. You got a new camera to be practicing with on the trip. What was it like? Tell me about the experience in general.
Iceland is amazing. You can't believe how much there is to see and just crazy, beautiful stuff. I think my favorite was Brúarfoss once we found it, and it's just gorgeous.
So as we shot Brúarfoss is a very, very difficult to find waterfall, But we found it, and we got there. You know, it was starting to get into the evening. We didn't have a ton of light left to shoot it the first time, and everybody kind of spread out to shoot. What did you find was difficult, and what did you succeed on in shooting the waterfall?
Well, I'm a relatively new digital photographer, and one of the things I really learned out of this trip, talking with the other photographers, is to remember to use all the tools I have to get increase the light into my camera. Remember to change ISO. But there's so many tools that I just need to get out and practice more so I know them. But Brewerfoss really showed me how to use some of those tools. So hopefully I've got some of these killer pictures like the rest of these guys.
So have you looked at your pictures yet from the trip on the computer? Have you done any editing?
No, I've not done any of that. I've not traveled with a laptop or anything, but I'm sure I'll have something. My camera's made good stuff, but I've made good stuff with my camera, so I'm confident I'll have something really be good.
So I know you spend a lot of time watching others post-process, though all of us have, you know, sitting down at the restaurant and people pull out laptops and trying different things in at the hotel. What are some of the specific tools or techniques that you saw that you'd like to do on your photos, or that you hadn't seen before, anything like that you'd like to be learning?
Well, I've been using Lightroom for almost a year now, I've really been helping more with some of the people who've had it for a day or two, and that's been fun for me to be able to share what I know. Others have shared with me so much, and to be able to pass along my knowledge is really rewarding. What I really like is the radial filter. Put a little touch of sunlight here or there, or increase some contrast in one specific areas. That's my favorite go-to trick for right now.
Well, very cool. Any other last-minute tips or things that you learned from the trip?
One of the things that I really learned for the first time is for a lot of these folks who do a lot of photography, like yourself, this looks like a real job and a real passion. The car with no more stop, and you were grabbed your camera, and you were out in the middle of a river while I'm still trying to get my tripod out of the car. So I've really come to appreciate how hard photographers work to get their shots.
Well, very cool. It was fun having you on the trip. Hopefully we'll have you. I think we'll see you in Oregon, hopefully, on the next one.
Yeah, I hope to make another one, and maybe you'll come down through the Sierra sometime, or we'll get together somewhere.
Well, good. Thanks for joining us.
All right.
Sounds good. All right. Up next, we have Paul Haynes. Paul's joined us from Oklahoma. And Paul, what were some of the main things that you took away from the trip?
First of all, it was a great trip. You meet a lot of great people. And my big takeaway was that no matter how much you already know, you always learn from these groups. Last night, for example, we were just sitting around talking. Somebody, you know, whipped out a laptop, and all of a sudden we had a mini Lightroom class going on. Everybody putting their input into it, learned some new tips and tricks. As you know, in Lightroom or Photoshop, you can do the same thing about 10, 20 different ways. So it was good. It was a good learning experience.
And what was your favorite shoot or favorite experience of the trip?
God, that's a hard one. It would have to be the magical aurora light night. I mean, everything came together. The clear skies, the moon coming up. I mean, it was just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Well, awesome. Thanks for joining us on the trip.
Thanks, Jim.
Hi, I'm Rob Davis from the UK on the Iceland trip. The thing that I got the most out of on this trip was night photography and doing some light painting. I've tried it before and it's just been a horrible mess. Just endless pictures of black screens. But this time when I went to the falls, got some advice on settings, and what worked for me on my 5D was putting the ISO up to 2,500, and then going for a 30-second exposure. Moving the exposures backwards and forwards, we was getting varying amounts of lights with that same ISO setting. Then pump the ISO up, another stop to go to the next setting up, and then repeating the exposure exercise, and then seeing what we've got. If we shortened the shutter speed, we got crisper lines out of the aurora. If we lengthened the shutter speed, we got more blurred, more gentle lines out of the aurora. And it just worked really, really well for me. And I'm just really pleased with being able to get that for my first successful night shot. I'm pretty pleased with that. That's quite good. That's it. If I can pull out something as good as that for the rest of the trip, I'll be very happy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Perfect. Thank you.